Our next case is Omega Patents LLC versus BMW of North America LLC, docket number 22-2012. Mr. Centuri, Counsel Centuri.
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes. This way, just a minute, everybody ready? All right. You may go when you want.
May it please the Court. Your Honor, we're here because the Patent Office took two very different references, elected to put them together regardless.
Can you get a little closer to your mic or speak?
Yes, Your Honor. Sorry. Your Honor, we're here before the Court because the PTAB erred by combining two references that failed to disclose the claimed invention, and that if one were to try to combine them, they actually destroy the operability of those references. I do want to focus initially on the references themselves. The first of the two references we're talking about is the Hassan reference. That reference was directed to remote starting a vehicle in enclosed spaces. So this was the idea that the inventor was concerned with making sure that if one were to remote start the vehicle in a parking structure or something like that, there were adequate checks to make sure that there wasn't a buildup of carbon monoxide. So there were various sensors. There were actually visual sensors around it, carbon monoxide sensors. There was a timer to ensure that it didn't continue to run forever. The parties agree that Hassan itself doesn't disclose all of the elements of the Flick patent that's issued in this case. In particular, Hassan, although it is a remote start patent, it does not disclose anything about sending a parking brake command on the vehicle's data bus.
So let me see if I get your argument. You're arguing that Hassan and Brazil do not teach the limitations in the patent, and mainly because if you seek to combine them, you'll result with an element that's inoperable.
So we actually have two separate points here. One, yes, the conditions that are required for the Hassan patent for that remote start system to operate, those conditions are the opposite of those conditions required for the Brazil patent to operate. So that is one issue. The second issue is
that's because safety is a concern here.
Well, there are certainly each of these patents considers safety. The inventors consider safety for various features. But just to globally say that safety leads us to put these two disparate references together, we believe is too generalized and would essentially invalidate whole hosts of vehicle patents if that's all it took. I mean, everyone wants a safer vehicle. Everyone wants more convenient features. If all we need to say is, well, gee, this would make it safer, that's really no more than saying it would make the system better. And I think this Court in the active video cases said that's not good enough.
Where does the inoperability come in when the driver, let's say, starts the car remotely, and the car starts up and the climate control kicks in or something, goes and gets in the car, the minute they sit down and try to use the manual key, you're saying that's when everything becomes inoperable?
Generally speaking, yes, Your Honor. So someone with a Hassan system can start the vehicle remotely. However, in order to actuate a parking brake under Brazil, there has to be this imminent start detected, which is movement of the vehicle, an occupant in the seat, a key in the ignition. Those are all things that terminate the remote start of the Hassan. So essentially what you have is, yes, you can remote start the car, but in order to get the parking brake to actuate, you would take steps that would actually terminate starting. So we could start the car, and then ultimately the car would be stopped. And then a parking brake could be actuated in order to locally start the vehicle. Now, I do think that I mentioned earlier that these references are very different.
Your argument may have a little bit more force, I think, than what it does. If it directed the argument to a motivation to combine, but what you're looking at, you're attacking the references separately as opposed to together.
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I mean, we're looking at the references as a whole, and we're attacking the combination of them because the combination of them destroys the operability of the functionality that BMW and the board are trying to merge. This Brazil patent kind of a, it's a quirky patent. I still don't exactly understand the purpose of it, but essentially this is a patent where you go and get in the vehicle, and at that point when someone is physically there, the vehicle actuates the parking brake. Parking brake's not on the data bus, it's a direct connect parking brake, and part of that Berzel patent was using a secondary power source. So rather than using a parking brake that, according to Berzel, could drain the battery while the thing remains on its own, this is the secondary source for brake. And according to Berzel, Berzel believes that rolling away is a concern when somebody's physically in the vehicle. I'm not sure I understand that concern, but that is the concern. That was the concern of Berzel. So really our contention combining these two references is A, that you can't combine them without destroying them, and I think I know that BMW has argued that this case in Ray Newtek precludes us from combining it, as they claim that we are sort of attacking the references separately, but that In Re Mutet decision that BMW relies upon specifically says that you can't merge two, if you're trying to merge two references together, yes, it's improper to attack them separately, but if you were trying to merge two paths together in a way that destroys their operability, that's improper. That's not a way to get to obviousness. Now we do also address the motivation to combine. And this really goes to another of the arguments we made. There were two experts that submitted declarations in this case. BMW's expert was also deposed. Their expert claimed that it was well known that rolling away was a problem in the remote start context. The problem is that there was no support for that. Certainly he pointed to Berzel, but everybody agrees that wasn't remote starting the vehicle, that's simply starting it locally. Beyond that, when their expert was deposed, he couldn't cite any industry stats or references or anything that suggested to him and supported the notion from his position that rolling away was this problem. So it is, from our perspective, we believe that this was simply conclusory expert testimony that the board wholly accepted in terms of finding that this was a problem, when in fact, the only one to actually identify this to be a problem in respect to remote starting was Mr. Flick when he filed these patents. Now, there is one other issue that we have raised with the court with regard to these experts, and that is the idea that the board abused its discretion in failing to consider Omega's expert. Here we have a situation where two different experts have very different testimony. BMW's expert says, sure, there's a motivation to combine because of this rolling away. The only thing he can reference is rolling away in the context of local starting, and acknowledged in deposition that he wasn't aware of any studies or other support for this position. The board never makes express reference to Omega's expert other than a footnote number one in the opinion that says both parties submitted expert testimony.
Why isn't that enough for us to have confidence that they were aware of it clearly and they must have considered it and given your expert's analysis the weight they thought it deserved?
Well, Your Honor, I don't think that that's consistent with this court's opinions in cases like In Re Lee that require a substantive explanation of why the board went the way they went with the evidence. Here you have the board burdens preponderance of the evidence, and the only two pieces of evidence that seemingly relate to motivation combined is two experts. One the board references half a dozen times and says, we adopt what he says, we like him. He has this well-reasoned opinion that found that it's well-known in the remote starting world of rolling away, yet he acknowledged in depth he didn't have any sources for that. On the other hand, we had Mr. McAlexander citing the fact that one of skill in the art couldn't possibly combine these, and he wasn't aware of anyone other than Mr. Flick that recognized rolling away to be a problem. The board failed to provide any explanation as to whether one expert's testimony was more than the other, and here we are today before this court.
I don't understand that. They talked about the expert's opinion that they believe credible and that they adopted. What more do they need to do? The whole point of the board having to explain its reasoning is for us to be able to review their decision making. And we know what the basis for their decision is. It's that they adopted one expert.
Well, I guess I take...
It sounds like you're asking us to grade their paper and say they got a B- on their writing because they didn't fully analyze the issue. But, I mean, as long as they didn't fail on giving a reason, then it's not a procedural error.
I guess I take this court's decision in Ray Lee to be to require more than that, in the sense that here, the board said, we accept BMW's position without any explanation as to why contrary evidence, the only, really when you have two pieces of evidence and you have completely contradictory evidence, it's BMW's burden to prove preponderance of the evidence, and the board says, yeah, we'll take his guy, even though in depo he said he didn't really know anything. That, I think that's where we are.
But given the way the arguments were made, did the board give us enough by which we can discern with reasonable certainty the path of its reasoning?
Well, Your Honor, with respect to affirming that decision, no, I believe that the board...
Why not? We know what their decision is. We know what evidence they relied on. You're pointing to evidence in the record that detracts from that. We can look at it and determine whether their expert is good enough substantial evidence or not. Whatever reason the board had for disregarding your evidence is kind of irrelevant on appeal because we know what the board's decision is and we're reviewing it for substantial evidence.
Your Honor, without me understanding why the board discounted certain evidence.
Who cares why the board discounted the evidence? That's not a basis for our review.
But how do we do that? From my perspective,
yeah, I know. You would like a better opinion. You didn't get it. It doesn't mean that we're going to reverse it to give you a better opinion on review. Our job, the whole point of those cases is if the board has not sufficiently explained its analysis for us to review, then we'll send it back. But they have. You don't like it. You wish they would have addressed your expert evidence. Maybe the better course is for them to do it. But what's the legal error that entitles you to a remand?
Respectfully, Your Honor, I think that in this context, I don't know how you get to make a determination as to substantial evidence in BMW's favor if you don't have any understanding of how the board weighed our expert. I understand that the court disagrees with me, but I see my time has expired.
Okay. We'll restore you back to your 3 minutes. Counselor Speck. Is that, did I pronounce that correctly?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. You may proceed.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Kara Speck from Finnegan on behalf of Appellee BMW of North America, LLC. The patented issue in this case, the 814 patent, is about remote starting a vehicle, and it claims four simple steps. First, receiving a remote start signal. Second, activating the climate control system in response to the remote start signal. Third, activating the parking brake in response to the remote start signal. That is the place that the dispute lies here. And then fourth, eventually starting the engine. My opposing counsel pointed out that there is no dispute that the primary reference relied on by the petitioner does not disclose activating the parking brake in response to the remote start signal. That is correct. The secondary reference, Berzel, however, does disclose activating a parking brake, albeit in response to a local start signal. Again, that's undisputed by either side. The combination the petitioner proposed below and that the board adopted as its own is taking Hassan's remote start system, steps 1, 2, and 4 of the four simple steps, focus on the remote start signal, and Berzel's activation of the parking brake in response to a local start signal. And based on the substantial evidence provided by the petitioner and petitioner's expert, Dr. Eskandarian, concluded that it would have been obvious to activate the parking brake as disclosed by the secondary reference Berzel in response to Hassan's remote start signal in order to meet all four limitations of the claims. This is a very simple combination, and the dispute here before this court is extremely narrow. It's a question of substantial evidence. Is the board's conclusion that activating a parking brake in response to the remote start signal was obvious? And here, we have substantial evidence. My opposing counsel pointed out that he would like there to be an abuse of discretion or some legal error. There is not. The only question here is, does the board's opinion sufficiently show that substantial evidence weighs in favor of supporting their conclusion.
Why would we, or how can we know that the board adequately considered their expert, and should we want to know why they rejected their expert?
Yes, Your Honor, and we do know. It is much more than just a single footnote in the opinion, and I want to refer to appendix page 27. So to start, there's much more than just a single footnote. We have 11 pages of analysis from the board that appears in appendix pages 20 through 31. In that 11 pages, there are no fewer than 24 citations to the patent owner's papers. Four citations directly to Mr. McAlexander's report. I'm sorry, it's three citations to Mr. McAlexander's report. But every citation the board provided to the patent owner's papers, the patent owner's response, and the patent owner's surreply includes a carried portion of Mr. McAlexander's report. His report does no more than repeat what's stated in those papers. So every time the board cites to the patent owner response or to the patent owner's surreply, that's also citing and considering Mr. McAlexander's report. But I want to give you two specific examples that show beyond any doubt that Mr. McAlexander was fully considered. So first, on page 27 of the joint appendix, and this comes from the board's final written decision, the board says, patent owner specifically argues, and here is a quote, a PCTA would understand that a driver interested in remote starting of the engine and adjusting the climate within the vehicle ahead of her arrival at the vehicle, as in Nissan, would not look to a vehicle brake actuation along with local starting of the engine, as in Verzel, for additional convenience and user satisfaction. The board here is quoting directly from Mr. McAlexander's report. That's exactly the position that you just heard my opposing counsel present here as well, that he believes was ignored. It was not ignored. It's a direct quote out of Mr. McAlexander's report at paragraph 80, and that's actually from his supplemental report. There's another direct quote from Mr. McAlexander's report on page 29 of the joint appendix. And this portion of the joint appendix is from the final written decision where the board is not just quoting and acknowledging that they've considered the arguments, but actually assessing which side they believe and discrediting Mr. McAlexander in favor of Dr. Eskandarian. At the bottom of appendix 29, there's a section where the board expressly says, we are not persuaded by patent owner's arguments that Dr. Eskandarian's lack of knowledge or studies substantiating net rolling away is a natural problem, detracts from his credible testimony. And they cite here to Mr. McAlexander's report, paragraph 69. So although not a direct quote, if you go to paragraph 69 of Mr. McAlexander's report, he's saying there that rolling weight is not a natural problem, and there is no benefit to preventing that here. He's directly contradicting what Dr. Eskandarian says. This portion proves that the board weighed both sides of the evidence, considered it fully, and sided with BMW's expert over Mr. McAlexander. To the question of why the board considered Dr. Eskandarian more credible than Mr. McAlexander, we can dig in even further. Dr. Eskandarian is clearly the more credible expert here. Instead of just conclusory testimony that parrots the patent owner's papers, which is what Mr. McAlexander provided, Dr. Eskandarian provided, and as the board stated, a reasoned, well-thought-out opinion that's supported by other evidence beyond just his testimony. At page 38 of our of Appellee's brief, we lay out four pieces of evidence, and the most important one that I want to point you to that gets to both what's the substance of the disclosure and also why is the board correct that these two would have been combined. There's a reference to the secondary reference in the combination, the Burzel reference, and this quote also appears in the joint appendix at page 2907. And here, the reference states expressly, Dr. Eskandarian relied on it, and so did the board, that activating the parking brake ensures safety by avoiding faulty operations and rolling away of the vehicle. This is an express teaching, suggestion, and motivation to combine, not simply conclusory testimony like my opposing counsel pointed out was shot down in the active video case. Here we have evidence of record, indeed evidence from the references that the petitioner relied upon, that proves this combination is not only correct, but that the board has substantial evidence backing its decision. Um, I want to respond very briefly to my opposing counsel's argument about attacking the references separately, and they mentioned the In Re Mutet case. The In Re Mutet case has another portion of it. It's the appellee's position that, yes, they are attacking the references separately, but also that they're advocating for bodily incorporation, which the Patent Office found neither is appropriate. And the In Re Mutet case addresses both. The question here is not, would you be able to take the entirety of the Virgil reference and put it into the Hassan reference, which is what Matt Cohen is advocating for here and saying that's what the board should have looked to. That's not the appropriate legal question. The question is, when taking the two references as a whole, which the board did in the 11 pages of analysis that it provided, would those references have suggested to a person of ordinary skill in the art that a combination would provide benefits? Here we have a precise benefit. It's not a global safety benefit, like my opponent pointed out. We have a precise motivation to combine. It's increasing the safety of the vehicle by preventing rolling away. And I believe my opposing counsel acknowledged that Virgil says rolling away is a problem, and the response that he provided is that, yes, if it's a problem when you're locally starting the vehicle. Well, if it's a problem when you're locally starting the vehicle, this is what Dr. Eskandarian opined, wouldn't it be an even bigger problem if the driver is not in the driver's seat and you're starting the vehicle remotely? In that case, it is important to provide that safe and secure starting by securing the parking brake of the vehicle. That's the motivation that Dr. Eskandarian provided. Again, page 38 of our brief has additional evidence that supports Dr. Eskandarian besides just his testimony. And that was the correct decision that's indisputably supported in the record. Because that Omega disagrees with the board's adoption of BMW's analysis over its own does not establish that the board ignored Omega's arguments about the evidence and analysis. And I want to quote from a case, it's the In Re Nuvasiv case, cited on page 50 and 51 of our brief, 842 F3rd 1376. The quote comes from pages 1382 and 83. We do not require perfect explanations, and we will uphold a decision of less than ideal clarity if the agency's path may be reasonably discerned. I believe that's the language you were quoting in one of your questions, Judge Reyna, as well. Here, there can be no question that the agency's path, PTAB's decision, and why it reached that decision cannot just be reasonably discerned based on imperfect explanations, but they provided a perfect explanation. If we're grading papers, this is not a B minus or a C. This is a solid A plus paper with 11 pages of analysis and a mountain of evidence that they relied upon. For those reasons, we would ask this court to affirm the PTAB's decision, and if there are no further questions, Your Honors, I will yield the remainder of my time.
Thank you. Ms. Senker, you're back to 3 minutes.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. First, I want to point out that all of these references are not to Mr. Meg Alexander. They're to Patent Office papers, which then footnote to Mr. McAlexander's. But I think the bigger point here is the question of rolling away. My opposing counsel is right. We acknowledge Virgil says rolling away is a problem when somebody's in the car, presumably because when you go to start a manual transmission car, you put the clutch in and it rolls. That's why you need somebody there. Nothing in the references cited, nothing that that their expert could come up with suggested that rolling away was a problem in the context of remote starting. These are two very different operations of the vehicle, different concerns. I think that that in their moving papers, in their briefs, they even referenced the fact that my client had a number of other remote start patents that referenced the fact that both.
Wasn't the whole issue of rolling away, of remotely starting a car and having that car take off on its own, wasn't that a concern that was pretty prevalent in the field of art?
If it is, Your Honor, there's no record evidence of it other than the BMW's experts saying it, but then being not able to identify a single support for that statement. And I think that's our primary point here is that, sure, we can point to, it would be safer if you do this. There's lots of things that might make a vehicle safer, but that doesn't necessarily lead you to the solution of the Flick patent unless you had the Flick patent at hand. and used hindsight reconstruction to get there. Your Honor, if the courts have no further questions, I'll cede the rest of my time.
Seeing none, we thank you. We thank all the parties for the argument this morning. All cases are taken under advisement, and this court stands in recess.